Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International, and it is November the 26th. Doing our call a couple days early since it's Thanksgiving this Thursday. Happy Thanksgiving early, everyone. And, today we wanted to talk about, well, just kind of part two of creating balance in your life and avoiding burnout for both you and the athletes you coach. And also, just to answer your questions, I've got lots of you sending questions, so that's great. Let's see. First, I know, Michelle, since you, it's 2 a.m. there, and you want to get you in, do your question first, maybe, since you're, might want to, in case you need to go to bed. But do you want to ask your question there that you just emailed me?
Sure. Do you want me to ask you now, or can you see it in front of you?
Yeah, I can see it, but yeah, if it comes from your voice, it's better.
Oh, yeah, I was just wondering, you know, what are the common reasons that athletes would call you? You know, I'm concerned that I have somebody in my office and they come up with, you know, an issue that I maybe hadn't thought of, and then I'm forced to sort of act on the spot, and I'm a bit insecure in that situation. So if I can just sort of think about all the possible scenarios whereby an athlete would come, then I can kind of have a bit of an action plan in my mind. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's a great question. Sort of the main things that people see and what kinds of issues they come up with. I'd say, and you all can chime in, too, with different things that you've seen in athletes that you've been working with, all of you. The number one thing that a common reason that a common complaint or concern that athletes have is they'll say, I can do it in training, but I can't do it in the competition. You know, or a parent will call in and say, my son or daughter is driving me crazy because I know they're so good. They have such good potential, but they can, they tend to, they're so poised and comfortable and relaxed in their training, but then when it comes to competition, they just don't, they lose it, you know, that sort of scenario.
Yeah.
And so that's one main one that is great to work with because you can help them to visualize the different, have them while they're in training or while they're in competition, have them visualize that this is just like training, this is just like practice. You know, have them think of being just as relaxed and just as comfortable as they are in practice, so that they don't freak out. So that's one big, there's lots of things you can do with that, of course. And I'd say another one would be an athlete has a major competition coming up and they're just really freaked out, they're really scared, not sure how to handle it. So that might be another one, a similar kind of situation where maybe they've never been in a competition of that level before. And they're not sure how to deal with that. So you can have them, you know, visualize all the different things that might happen in that competition. So that's another one to consider. Another major question would be slumps that we've been talking about, like in our last call. That an athlete will call and say, "I'm in a slump right now, and I can't seem to get out of it." Or they'll say, "I keep making the same mistakes over and over again." So that's one that you can talk about. with them and, work through different ways to, some of the things we talked about in our last call about being able to, maybe they need a break or maybe they need to be able to do add some more variety to their workout or be able to just, have more fun, be able to bring in the fun and enjoyment factor into their workouts. So those are some things that you can work on with them. Another one might be an injury. An athlete is injured. They were going for their main part of the season, and they got injured, and now they're depressed and very frustrated because they can't they can't work out. So you can help them with healing, being able to accelerate the healing of that injury and stay positive through the whole experience. So those are a few. There's many, lots of different ones we can talk about. Maybe let me just open it up to everyone here. And can you all, and Michelle, if you've got experience with other people you've worked with, or let me ask the rest of you, what kinds of concerns do you have from your athletes? What are the most common ones that come up?
Dr. Joanne, it's Amy. One of the complaints that I get is that the athletes will lose their confidence.
Uh-huh.
And get into, sort of a slump.
Yeah, so can you give an example, maybe?
Pardon?
You want to give an example?
Sure. I just coached someone who was a senior in high school who was on a softball team, and she used to be the pitcher, and then all of a sudden she started to just tense up when she was doing it, and she wasn't able to feel like herself when she was doing it anymore, and so they started not putting her in because they didn't want to make her uncomfortable. And so when she came to me, she really was in a slump and had no confidence about pitching and just wanted to stop doing it. And then we worked together for 3 sessions, and she started to just change her attitude and her mindset, and her pitching coach could tell that her body was just more relaxed. And, that helped her. It helped her a lot, get her confidence back.
Yeah, can you say what you did with her during the 3 sessions?
We did some visualizations. We did, I taught her how to remove the negative self-talk. We did some power words and some affirmations. We talked about her, really having a clear vision of what she wanted to happen. She was being recruited by different colleges and ended up getting a position somewhere and, had some tryouts for that and got picked for the team. And I think that also really helped her with her confidence. So she has a spot now on a team, and she's going to be the pitcher next year.
Wow.
But it didn't take that many sessions. It took, I think we had 3 sessions.
Yeah.
And just helping her identify what it was that was getting in her way and, why that was an obstacle, and to really just help her change her mindset and, kind of reshift her thinking.
Yeah, I like that. Yep. That's a great example. Amy, thank you. Yeah. Yeah, I find out what is it that's getting in their way, and often, there's a problem when somebody doesn't do well, they get put on the bench, then they sort of get really scared about going back in. Excuse me, I got a little cold. Other people that have examples of different common concerns that athletes bring to you? Anyone can jump in.
Well, I can kind of give an example from another point of view from a first responder firefighter that I'm working with right now.
This is Sue, right?
This is Suzanne, sorry. So he's basically had 6 different types of cancer from carcinogens that he's been exposed to over the years, and he's fought all the different cancers. And now he's got another cancer, and it's operable, it's in his lungs, and he's going to be operated tomorrow morning, and it hasn't gone into the lymph nodes or whatever. So, but at this point, he's getting some learned helplessness is setting in, even though he's fought over the years and he's gotten through, like he's recovered amazingly well. So I kind of did the same thing, tried to remove the fear and just try to say, well, how did you manage the other times that you came through, and you've had six different other surgeries for different issues, and you've recovered, you know. So I guess to get him grounded, focus that he's done this before, and just remove that fear factor and begin to help him a little bit be more affirmative of what, and even his looking at his had his belief system, what he was saying to himself to get him into that rut. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's pretty powerful when you can remove the fear, you know. I've seen this firsthand, and then once they really realize they can do it, and they have done it. It's not something that they're imagining that they've never done before. It's really powerful.
Yeah, that's a really great example, Suzanne. Thanks for sharing that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, gosh, when somebody
says... Does anybody else have any feedback of what else I could do with this gentleman, because he's going in tomorrow morning and he's all gung-ho for now, thinking I've done this and I'm going to get through this, and then it's another day, right?
Yeah. Maybe open it. Wait, he's going to do another surgery tomorrow?
Tomorrow, yes. He's got lung surgery. They're going to take a piece of his lung out where the cancer is. But, again, he's had so many isolated cancers that he actually has recovered from all of them.
That is amazing.
I'm sorry, this is Alex.
Yes.
And I hear that you're doing some visualization with him?
Yeah, visualizing on how he recovered from the other six times from different forms of cancer.
Okay.
Because he started having this learned helplessness, like, I might not make it this time, right?
Okay. So
yeah,
what if you did a visualization on how he would like to the surgery to end, to come out, to successfully.
Yes, the problem is the surgeon has told him that it's one of the most painful recoveries, you know. But so that didn't help. But yeah, I thought of that too. But because the information that he's got, so I just kind of focused on him recovering from the other ones, not so much focused on what he kind of already knows is going to be difficult.
Okay.
Yeah. And oftentimes, you know, just emphasizing that each person is different.
Mm-hmm.
And just because a doctor predicts something that this might be painful recovery doesn't mean that a lot of times people have a different experience than what the doctors say.
Right, that's correct. And I think with an athlete as well, if they're coming out of an injury and they're going back for the first time, that's probably very much parallel to this situation.
Right.
That they're afraid, right, to exert themselves in case, you know, it's going to be too painful, they're not, you know, they won't succeed.
And the idea to practice this visualization prior to surgery, or how close to surgery?
Well, we did this morning, so he's going in tomorrow morning.
Okay.
That's a good point. Dr. Graham, what would be a better time to do this?
Well, the more it is done close to surgery, the better.
Mm-hmm.
So we can prepare the cardiovascular system and all the organs to be better ready for surgery. So the calmer he goes into anesthesia, the better.
Mm-hmm.
That's
yeah, and also the night before, if he can visualize something right before he goes to sleep, then the subconscious mind can be working on that.
Yes. It's in fact, they have him, so they'll probably have him, medicated quite a bit, though, too. So that's another factor.
Does he listen to music? Does he like any music?
He's pretty pragmatic. He's a firefighter. Retired, so I mean he's very pragmatic in the way he thinks.
All right.
Yeah. So that
may not necessarily mean that he may like some. I mean, I don't know how old he is. Maybe he's in his 30s or 40s or.
No, he's in his 50s.
50s.
Okay. Yeah.
So he may like some music from back in the 80s. I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud.
Bringing him back to that's a very good point, Alex. Yes. Bringing him back to something that he can be familiar with that was
that's
positive.
Right. Yeah. But the goal in any surgical procedure is you want to help the body to go as calm as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that it goes into anesthesia is the way it comes out.
Right. Yes.
It's a big blow to the nerves to have the open surgery.
Yeah, open surgery.
It's a very
right.
big deal for the body. It's huge. So the calmer it is, the better it's get ready.
Yeah, that's a good point about the music or whatever would comfort him that he'd be familiar with.
That's right.
Yes, okay, good point. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, maybe listen to Pink Floyd may not be ideal.
I like Pink Floyd. That's good for me.
I mean, better price the surgery. I don't, but maybe that calms him down. I don't know. But
uh-huh.
whatever.
exactly, whatever makes him feel good.
Yeah.
Yeah, think of have him pick the music that he likes, maybe from his youth when he was feeling good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have a. I'm getting a little bit of an echo here for some reason, but I've got an MP3 I created. Excuse me. I'm sort of losing my voice here.
Mm.
Just a second.
Oh, poor girl.
Yeah.
She might want to reschedule this time.
Oh, I just had to blow my nose.
Do you feel like you want to reschedule, Dr. Joanne, if you're not feeling well?
Well, if my voice goes out, we'll try to go as long as we can here.
Okay.
But, if we're not...
Yeah.
If my voice goes out, we could do that. Now I feel a little bit better. Now, I was going to say, I did an MP3 for myself and then for a whole program when I went through eye surgery.
Mm-hmm.
I have that available. Let's see. I was thinking I could put it up. I could upload it to our members area, and of course it's specific to eye surgery, but it gives you lots of an idea of the kind of thing that you could make. For him. So why don't I, right after our session today, I'll do that. I'll upload that.
Oh, that'd be great. That's good.
Yeah, because I had cataract surgery a few years ago, and even though I'm not that old, I just got it early, and that's one of the best outcomes they've ever had. With it, I was able to have 20/20 vision is normal, and I came out with 20/15, which is even better than normal. Vision for long.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, that's good.
And I can read up to a 4-point print with no glasses.
Wow.
You know, which is phenomenal.
Good thing you got it early. You didn't have to wait till you're in your 60s.
Yeah.
Now you can see really well.
Yeah, it was great.
I'd appreciate that. And then I'll see, maybe try to get some feedback to the group to see, what his experience was.
Yeah.
Suzanne, as another possible resource, is a nice book that you may want to read. It's called The Body Bears the Burden.
Okay.
By Robert Caer, S-C-A-E-R.
S-C-A-E-R.
He's a wonderful guy. He understands very well the somatic piece of the mind-body integration and trauma. And it's one particular chapter 9, that he specifically talks about these particular examples, like going into surgery and what happens, and how to prepare patients to alleviate or to prepare the best they can so the physiology of the patient responds as less dramatically as possible.
Oh, that's
what's the title again?
The Body Bears the Burden.
The Burden, yeah.
Robert Scaer, S-C-A-E-R.
Great. Thank you.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
Sure.
Yeah.
Glad I'm on the call today.
Michelle, is that helpful a little bit for you?
Yes,
question?
Very much. I'll get on that. If you can download that to me, I can actually put something together and bring it to him tonight, this evening. That's great. Thank you.
Sure. Welcome.
Everyone.
Yeah. Thanks, Dr. Jan. That answered my question. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And there's lots of scenarios. Yeah, we can do maybe next time in our PECI call, do a sort of if-then kind of thing. Scenario: if a client says this, what kinds of things can you do? Then you can do.
I would
this.
Love that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Does anyone else? I guess if anyone else wants to share any examples of other concerns that clients have. We can also go to, let's see, Dave, you had a question, or Amy.
Yeah.
Both Dave and Amy had questions.
That's okay. She can go, however.
However you want to do it. Well, let's see. Who wants to go first?
Okay.
I can go. It doesn't matter. Do you want to go, Amy? That's fine.
Doesn't matter.
Go ahead.
Okay. I was talking to Dr. Joanne last week about a meeting that I was having with the head of HR at a big insurance company. And we were at the point where she decided that she wanted to have me do a small pilot program to introduce the program. And so the last call that we had, she was a little bit disappointed by some feedback that she got from employees in her company in regard to them having a very low participation rate for a health insurance incentive, where they give these people 30% reduction if they participate in a program and their spouse goes. And she was kind of blown away by the low participation, even though there was a financial reward attached to it. So that made her not as excited about moving ahead with this program. So, the door is still open for me, but I just wanted to get some insight or feedback as to what maybe some thoughts that people had in a situation where you're kind of at a standstill, but I feel that I still have a great opportunity to be really positive and creative and convince her that this is precisely why you need the program, because this program that you're offering is not exciting, even though there's an attachment, for a medical reduction for their insurance. They're still not jumping at it. So that's sort of where I am. And I just wanted to open it up and see if anyone had any thoughts or ideas as to, what would be, first of all, what would be the right approach in something like this where you have a possibility, but I have to be careful because I don't want to be, too pushy about it.
Yeah, you could ask her what other programs have they done that have been successful.
I don't think they've done any.
Oh, okay.
Not like this. I mean, they've done programs where they use these large companies that come in and just do these baseline medical assessments where they'll have a physical. If they're 50, they'll say you've got to have a colonoscopy, things like that any normal doctor would tell you to do. But now they have the wives doing it too, but they're just not getting a high response. So that, I don't know if that, she was just really disappointed about that and she didn't have any enthusiasm about this now. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I guess timing is some of it, maybe. In January is a really good time to do a new program.
Yeah, that's when it would be for. That's what we had talked about.
Uh-huh. Do other people have suggestions? I can, I can let my voice rest here a little bit. I think, yeah, it's, it seems like, if you, Amy, if you can get really, get really clear in your mind what you'd like to have happen and visualize, you know, a really good outcome from this, then you can, I've found before in my own experience, if I can be really enthusiastic and clear, that then I project that onto, you know, in my voice and ideas, and the other person often, excuse me, will agree with that or go along with it. Excuse me.
And I'm wondering, Amy, this is Suzanne, if you might want to ask, is it the HR lady that you're dealing with?
Yes.
I was just commenting at Suzanne. I was just saying to Amy, I'm wondering if it would be a good idea to maybe ask the HR lady what needs to happen for these people to buy in.
Yeah.
Like, where are they at? And she might be able to give you some feedback to say, well, this, you know, A and B has to happen before this. At least she'll get some clarity around, you know, there's probably a reason why they're not buying in. Maybe they're not, they've had negative experience in the past, but, you know, to have that information is really important.
You mean for the assessments that she's currently having them do?
Well, she's the one telling you that they're not really motivated, correct?
Yeah, well, they're not motivated with what they've been offering them, which is, you know, sort of the basic medical exam and things like that.
But have you had a chance to at least present your material?
No, not yet.
Yeah. So maybe she's not clear. She's not clear what you're doing and what you can offer.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. Maybe if I make it much more specific.
You have to sell her. She's got to be enthusiastic about it before she can go sell it to the team.
Yeah, that's a good point. Suzanne, Amy, I'm just wondering if you could send her an email with your ideas.
Well, I did. I mean, I did send her an email after when I talked with a bunch of questions and a bunch of different topics that we could, possibly do.
Another thing that really works well, Amy, I find, when you do a case study for them. So it becomes really applicable, and you've got the concepts involved, and they can really get a clear picture about what you're doing and the outcome of that. Even if you do a simulation of one, a fictional one. Take one employee, for instance, that could be in the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And do a case study and say, this is what happened. This person presented this. This is what we did. This is what happened. That sort of thing.
That's a good idea.
And then you might want to find out what the various issues are in the organization. Is it stress? Are they leaving on short-term disability? Or is it,
the biggest issue she said were that they were smokers and that they were overweight.
So lifestyle.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's probably stress that goes along with that, too.
Mm-hmm.
So you think it makes sense to create more of a program in its entirety and then present it to her?
I think so. I think that if you could, you know, show her that you've really thought this out and that you have, you know, some real specific concepts you can give her, and that, you know, you've got a whole program that you could offer, she might be more likely to look at that and say, okay, she's thinking, okay, I don't have to do so much work on this. Amy's done it all already. But then also provide flexibility and say, we can, you know, customize this now to your organization. So it doesn't have to be a canned program, but it can be exactly what they need. You know what I mean? Are you there? Hello?
Hello? I'm sorry.
Oh, I don't know if you heard what
I muted myself for a second.
okay.
The original idea was to send out an email to people explaining, you know, what we were thinking of doing. That was where we were. So that's why I didn't really devise the program specifically until we figured out, are there people that are going to sign up for it? And we were going to do a survey of what the topics that interest them. That's kind of where we were.
Yeah, that's what you and I talked about.
Right, before I made a program up to find out exactly what are the interests there of the employees.
Yeah, I think that would be a really good idea. But since she's
I would get them to do up a survey before you even come up with an idea or even. See, just let them come up with the fact that they need something.
Yeah, I mean, it's obvious that they do.
Well, they might not think they do, though. You know what I mean? You can pitch a smoking cessation program, but they might not think they need it. But if they all of a sudden come up with, this would be good, this is what I need, then they'll most likely sign up for it.
Yeah, I think, like, the topics was, you know, Amy, we were talking about saying choose which topic you want more.
Yeah, it's just really interesting how we think sometimes we know what the topic is, and then when you throw it out, you get something completely different back from them going, wow, I wouldn't think that. It would be obvious they'd want smoking cessation, but maybe not, right? They might want something about how to deal with difficult people or...
Yeah, that's why I think the survey is a no-brainer. Like, what does she have to lose? The only thing she has to that's going to happen is she's going to get more clarity on what the issues are with the employees.
And she didn't want to give out the survey, is that it?
Well, I think she was sort of stuck on the report that she got back that day about the low participation, and she wanted to just sort of think about it and...
So she's not feeling very optimistic that it would be a good turnover.
Right, because she's not getting that.
Right.
I mean, you can look at it two ways. You can look at it, well, they're not interested in it because it's pretty dry stuff, and now you're making their spouse do it, and maybe they don't want to do it either. So to offer something much more, tuned into what your employees need and want, and to find out through the survey.
Yeah, I think that's if there's a way you can get
the way I can really encourage her to pursue that and at least get some information and then let her decide what she wants to do.
Yeah, and sometimes people just need a little time. Like you said, she wants to wait till December.
Yeah, till
June. Yeah, it could just be as simple as a timeline for her.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for your ideas.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. Thanks, Amy, and good luck with it. We'll check
yeah.
again. Yeah, Dave, did you have great questions, too?
Yeah, I just was wondering if you could touch just a little bit more on energies that performers and athletes typically fight against and people say is bad, like fear or anger. And can you talk, or anybody really, talk a little bit more about reframing these energies that really aren't good or bad unless we're really thinking about it, and how to potentially use these energies to our advantage as a coach, and maybe how athletes or clients that we work with, how they could use it as an advantage, even if they're feeling anxiety or so-called anxiety, maybe just a surge of energy in competition or anger, just how maybe they could reframe it, and maybe just touch on that a little bit more. I think you've done a great job, though, already, but I enjoy hearing different ways of looking at it.
Yeah, that'd be great. Dave, do you have an example? I was just wondering, you know, when you think of somebody that's gotten nervous or anxious.
Well, I can remember when I played on mini tour. I remember I had my girlfriend's father caddying for me, and I'm on the first tee, and he looks over at me and he goes, "Are you nervous?" And like he was so afraid of the nervousness and the excitement, luckily, I had enough insight at the time to say I'm excited. I mean, I'm not calm like I am like on a Sunday afternoon sitting on the couch right now, but nor do I think I'd want to be in that situation. And I think a lot of the people I come across when I teach golf, you know, they think that these guys are just so relaxed, but I think there's like an intense relaxed focus, and you've talked about kind of finding that optimal arousal level. And I guess maybe it's just not looking at those energies as a bad thing, because what I've learned is that they're really not. And if you can reframe it and kind of look at it differently, it can be very helpful to the athlete or the performer.
I like what you just said, Dave. It's Sue. The fact that your father-in-law or your whatever, future father-in-law, whatever,
yeah.
said, "Are you nervous?" And you said, "No, I'm just a little bit excited." That's a really good way of framing it. Very positive,
yeah.
And it's very realistic. And it's very,
yeah.
It's very healthy.
Well, I think it's funny. I mean, I've had, you know, I've come across so many people that, you know, they really do. They look at that energy like it's not supposed to be there, and maybe they don't
exactly.
experience it a lot. And I think it's just
so for that athlete to say, "No, I'm not nervous. I'm at a really good point zone right now. I'm excited." It's a positive thing.
But
yeah.
It can turn into a real internal battle, I think, if you're fighting, you're just fighting that energy that just is what it is, and we've put a negative.
Right, and
it.
That energy should be there in order to succeed, right? Maybe, Dr. Joanne, you can comment better than I can for more of the athletic part of it.
Yeah, it's. I think each person is different, and we all need to find that right energy level to, you know, get into the zone. Some people need to be a little hyper, and some need to be more relaxed. And so I think athletes that consistently perform well, they've found ways to channel that energy and, you know, that nervous energy into a powerful source of inner strength and confidence.
Awesome.
And, you know, you want to develop that ability to kind of find that right energy level. So some of that can come you know, if you can have your athletes keep a logbook and rate their energy level, their nervousness from 1 to 10, and sometimes when an athlete's at a 9, you know, really high energy level, they might perform really well. Another athlete, that might be too high. They need to be more at a 5, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and would breathing... You know, say that they find out that a 9 is too high. would breathing techniques probably would dissipate some of that energy. Am I correct, or not necessarily?
Yeah, some of the things you can do are, that's the number one thing you can do to help, bring yourself down a little bit. The quickest, most efficient way to relax is take 10 slow, deep abdominal breaths.
I've got one that I use to get a person in the moment very quickly if they're anxious. And you want me to share it with you quickly?
Oh, sure, go ahead.
I think I sent it to you, Dr. Joanna. It's called a 5-4-3-2-1. Basically, you look around and you see five things and you say five things that you can see. So it keeps you in the moment. So, I see the sky, I see this, I see the tree. And then five things that you can hear, and then five things you can feel, like I feel my shoes, like tactically feel. And then four things you can see, four things you can hear, four things you can feel, 3-2-1. And you don't have to keep going down to one, but by the time you usually get to two, you're relaxed because it brings you right back into the moment without feeling too anxious.
Right.
So it works really well with people that all of a sudden get scared and they need to get back into the moment of, hey, I'm okay. So it distracts you enough to get you in that moment quickly, but it's not boring enough that you're going to lose focus.
Yeah.
So
that's
5-4-3-2-1. So five things: see, hear, and feel.
Yeah. So it's really activating your mind.
Yeah, and you can do it anywhere, right? If you're on the golf, golfing, or if you're on the ice, or if you're running.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's a great.
That's really great.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Yeah, and another thing you can do is, as you breathe, say something positive to yourself. So as you breathe in, say, I'm breathing in strength. As you exhale, say, I'm breathing out tension.
Okay.
And so that gives your mind a lot of things to work on. Also keeps your mind and body in complete synchronization.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then just accepting the fact that you're going to be nervous, I think, is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
That it's a normal reaction before any event.
I think if I might put my two cents.
Go ahead, Alex.
I think what may help is to help the athlete be more aware of distinguishing between the positive, good adrenaline rush versus the nervous, inhibiting rush or feeling. Because the athlete may perceive the whatever is happening at that moment as negative, and that may not be the case. And if it is the case, then he knows which one it is. So if it is a negative one, maybe I can do some breathing, exercising, relaxation. One of them may be to take abdominal inhaling for 6 seconds, pause for two, exhale for seven, so 6, 2, 7. If it is a positive rush of adrenaline, then great, beautiful. That's where it's supposed to be. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's great, Alex.
Yeah.
And
even more so, like the energy is the energy. It's just a matter of how one is framing it anyway. So even if we could be conscious of the fact that I think everybody has an inner critic at times and be able to step back from it and look at it, take a deep breath, and then, like Dr. Joanne said, and place something good in there, some way of reframing it, perhaps that would be helpful as well.
Yeah, just the fact that, reframing it as energy, not just that it's a good energy, something that can help you, that you can channel into whatever you want.
Yeah.
And then also just reminding, another good technique, being nervous, is reminding yourself that you're well prepared. You know, thinking back on all your good work, great workouts to complete is to prepare. You know, like for your golf event. Excuse me. Remembering how dedicated and looking back in your logbook, saying to yourself, I'm well trained. Excuse me. I think my voice is getting
fine.
Sorry. Is that helpful, Dave?
Yes, very helpful. Thanks. Thanks, everyone. That was great.
Yeah, and I might just, I can, you know, put up some other information about this, too. I think my voice is kind of going out here, so the best thing would be let's plan on talking more on our next call on December the 12th. And we'll have it at the same time at 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern. Thank you all for helping me with and a great discussion. Since my voice is going out, it helps me to rest a little bit here.
Yeah.
Well, you are one persistent woman.
Sorry about all the popping.
No, that's amazing. You did really well.
Yeah, I kept getting through this thing. Yeah, geez, I get that little tickle in the throat, you know, that won't go away. But thanks so much. And, if you have any other questions, feel free to email them to me. And, we'll talk on December 12th then, all right?
Okay, thank you so much.
Great. Well, feel better.
Thank you.
Yeah. Or Michelle, if maybe we could just do a quick recap. If you could say something that was helpful for today, or something that you learned. What was the best thing that you learned today? Anyone can jump in.
Well, I found it very interesting. Just, I guess you talked on the last call about the energy and the different systems, and I found that to be new information for myself and very interesting. And I liked how you talked about having the athlete journal their energy levels and how that correlated to their performance, and that some athletes perform better when they're at a higher arousal state, and others perform better at a lower arousal state. So it's not just one answer for every athlete. Each one is different, so they need to be looked at differently.
Yeah, that's great, Michelle. Thanks. Other people? What was helpful for today?
No, it was great. Really, really good information.
Yeah.
I appreciate
it. Yeah, it's very nice. I liked it. Very nice. Good.
The whole thing, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Well, yeah, it's great to have a nice exchange.
I got just one quick question about the class. Is the class, we're in the last module, correct, with the final exams. Is this the last week where we do homework and then we just come in for the call afterwards? And also, I never got an email about the level 2.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Thanks, Dave, for the reminder.
Yeah.
I'll email you that this week.
Okay.
And I'll give you, email you feedback on your exam and everything. Yeah. So I'll email you all the information. Here.
Okay, great.
My voice
great.
Is going out.
Yeah, I don't want to keep talking.
Have a great Thanksgiving.
Okay.
Have a happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay.
Right.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks, Dr. Joanne.
Bye.
Take care, everyone.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye.